You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is a podcast from Minute Media. This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Troy Radio. This is the CarCast. After USC go up to Pullman and nothing goes their way for the first 29 minutes, and then it's all SC with the Trojans winning the game 45-14, 45 unanswered points with Jackson Dart. Yes, Jackson Dart at the helm for USC in Pullman. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, journalist, with my co-host, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
And we are back for a car cast, a road car cast, which means we're here in the studio coming a little bit quicker. We do have some family hanging around, so there might be some background noise. So you're just going to have to roll with it. But
just a steady rumble. Maybe the occasional screeches of a 18-month-old.
Yeah. More importantly, there's plenty of steady screeches from people watching this game and freaking out that SC had a terrible first half and a wonderful second half. Alicia, what do you think? 45-14.
My first thought, and I put this on Twitter, and I don't want this to be read into. I'm not drawing conclusions. I'm not making a comparison that has any substance or anything like that. But did that game not feel like classic Pete Carroll? Like classic in the sense that like the first half was awful. The team just was playing down to their opponent. They came in at halftime, and then suddenly the switch got flipped, the adjustments got made, the energy changed, whatever it was, a 28-point third quarter. And I mean, I literally cannot remember the last time USC had a 28-point third quarter.
28-point third quarter?
Can't remember. Yeah, I mean, probably back to Pete Carroll days, quite literally back that far. But it was like USC came out and was a different team in the third quarter, and you saw the beginnings of that, the stirrings of that on that last drive in the second quarter when they got the 7 points going into halftime, help make it feel like they were more in the game, and it was just completely different vibe in that second half, and that has not been the USC has had some magical fourth quarters in the past few years. But the full, complete performance of the second half where they, A, didn't give up any more points to Washington State.
Did it in every phase. Well, maybe the exception of special teams.
Yeah.
Did it on offense and defense.
Completely shut down Washington State's offense, which looked like they could move the ball at will early in this game. And they just completely shut it down. The offense went hog wild. It was just really, really, really fun to see USC do the thing that I've been calling for them to do for a long time, which is put your foot down on the throat of an opponent and not let them breathe for the rest of the game. We've seen USC have relative blowouts. I mean, Washington State got blown out by USC last year, but it was not even close to the sensation that this one was. It felt very different, which is all we've been asking for this whole time. Just do something different and we'll be happy. So I really can't complain. I mean, can't complain at all. That was a fun, fun, fun game.
Yeah, and it's going to be a lot of talking points about what was Dante Williams, what was Keaton Slovis, what was Jackson Dart, what was Graham Harrell, what was Tyler Ando's input, like all of that. And I think it's going to be really interesting to dissect this a little bit more, because I think that we can have all sorts of hot takes in the moment. Clearly, Keaton Slovis goes down on the third play of the game, leaves, does not return, and Jackson Dart comes in and is what helps spearhead the turnaround, even though it took Jackson Dart a quarter and a half to get to the point where he could get SC into the end zone. So it still took a bit. It's not like it was a miraculous change overnight. This was a full team turnaround. And I think for me, it was the adjustments that you saw in the second quarter and how they progressed through the end of the game on offense and defense. On offense, it was SC going away from the run. They could not run the ball at all in this game.
Well, can we talk about how USC had 48 rushing yards, and this was their best offensive performance of a long time?
Yeah.
So, like, clearly the whole bullcrap of we need to be averaging 170 rushing yards, it was bullcrap.
I told you last year it was. Like, be what you're good at. If what you're good at is being an air raid team that chucks the ball up and down the field, then be the air raid team that chucks the ball up and down the field.
If you need to be YOLO raid, which I think Jackson Dart absolutely embraced, then be YOLO raid. Like, that was what made this all fun. And maybe you can't do that every game. Maybe you can't do that against every opponent. I think Washington State's defense is ripe for the pickings for this kind of thing.
Yes.
And you might not be able to do this against, Oregon's defense. But you can do you can blow out bad defenses.
Yeah, welcome SC has to not life. Done it.
Yeah.
SC has not done this. So you need to blow out a bad team before you can run against anybody else, figuratively speaking. Running against anyone else, they have done, except for Washington State this year. SC is not able to run the ball, so they focus more on the passing game. They use that as a way to find open guys. And they found open guys. They got guys open for the first time all year. Keaton Slovis hadn't been throwing open guys. Jackson Dart was able to throw to open guys because those guys were available. They threw downfield for the first time all season. Didn't really do that in the first two games. Here they were throwing downfield, finding guys, and getting everyone involved in the passing game. Well, everyone, even though Drake London still had like 18 targets, so it was still the Drake London show, but they were able to move the ball and really find some diversity in the passing game of the types of routes they were running and where Jackson Dart was looking. Well, he was looking all over the field.
How you were threatening the defense in different ways. And to spoil some over-under stuff, like we had an over-under about big plays down the field, 30-yard plays down the field. USC had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 passing plays of 30 yards or more in this game.
Yeah.
There's no reason you couldn't have been doing that the whole time. And two of those were late on in the fourth quarter. But like you still had four in time when this game was going on. Like,
well, my problem is if teams are going to drop 8 to take away those things, then kill them underneath.
Yeah.
But SC wasn't killing teams underneath.
Yes.
So they were being able to move the ball between the 30s.
The receivers were blanketed underneath, which is like...
Yeah, and they were blanketed underneath in addition to everything else. But they weren't able to punch it in the red zone. They weren't able to make the big play when you needed it. And here SC was, after committing to, hey, you know what? We're an air raid team. We're going to act like it. They were able to throw the ball vertically. They were able to get everyone involved. They were able to do all those things. And I know the air raid isn't about throwing vertically. It's about throwing to space. It's about getting guys open, but they did that. And when you do those things, you open up the vertical passing game. You open up other opportunities to do things on offense. SC did that. Part of it is Jackson Dart is someone who can run. Is he a running quarterback? No, I wouldn't say so, but he's someone who's mobile, and that's going to give you the threat of it, which forces defense to have to account for it. And there was a tweet that we got that said, you know, Dart clearly shows that you need a running quarterback to run this offense. I don't think you do. I don't think you need a running quarterback to be an air raid team. Look at all the air raid quarterbacks in the history of the universe. Most of them have not been running quarterbacks. However, if you're going to do what SC wants to do, which is be an air raid team, but at the same time have these power spread formations with the tight ends involved and all that stuff, then you kind of do need a running quarterback because you need another player that the defense can focus on. And so you're going up against a 10-man defense against an 11-man defense because one guy has to cover two players, right? So it helped out. It opened up some things, and then SC was really able to go to the air raid and go to the vertical passing game.
Well, it's more important that Jackson Dart had 32 yards rushing in this game and led the team in rushing than the fact that Keonta Ingram and Vi Malapai combined for 25 rushing yards. Like, right. That's more important that you had the running threat, because quite frankly, USC could have run less in this game and I would have
probably
been happy.
Should have. Probably should have run less.
Some of the early run plays that they were doing were just mind-numbingly playing into Washington State's hands, and that was very frustrating.
Yeah, and on the flip side of the things, we can talk about literally the inverse of this. SC came out on defense in the first quarter, and they decided that their way to defend the Nick Rolovich run and shoot was to drop eight and to be very soft on defense and to play back, take away deep passes. And that I didn't care for that at the moment, and I noted this on Twitter, I noted it to you, Alicia, like, this sort of plays into Washington State's hand because you're allowing them to run the ball, and their best player is Max Borgi. And we've talked about it a million times over, Max Borgi is Shasta Christian McCaffrey, but Shasta Christian McCaffrey is still pretty damn good, right? So it just allows him to kill you. And he did in that first quarter. And Washington State was able to move the ball. So if you're going to be lax and drop eight, then you have to take away the passing game. They still didn't. And then that enabled Max Borgi to get involved. And you look at their drives, the first three drives for Washington State. 89 yards, touchdown. 45 yards, turnover on downs. And then 58 yards, touchdown.
Which, and that turnover on downs was partly the reason they turned it over on downs instead of getting a field goal out of that, because they had been moving the ball so effortlessly that it made perfect sense to go for it on fourth down.
Right, yeah.
Like, of course they were going to go for it because they were going to get those yards. So that was part of the narrative is Washington State averaged 8.2 yards per play in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Like, that it was bad.
And then everything switched. SC started to bring more pressure. They didn't go completely to the man coverage and send the house defense that you saw late in games against Arizona State, that you saw in the first 2 weeks, that Stanford kind of picked SC apart down the flank of the field. No, they didn't do those things. They did sort of a half thing where they were still able to drop coverages.
They were picking their moments.
Yeah, they were dropping coverage, dropping guys in coverage, but they were still able to bring the heat. And that put pressure on Jaden Delora. It took away the run game. It took away Max Borgi. And if you take away Max Borgi, he's their best player. I'm sorry. I know that they're a passing team, but make them pass. Make Jaden Delora make a mistake. He will do it. Don't force them to use Max Borgi. And you look at their next several drives. 1 yard, punt. 7 yards, punt. Negative 7 yards, punt. Negative 5 yards, scoop and score in the end zone for a touchdown, strip sack, 0 yards interception, 0 yards punt, 9 yards punt.
Mm-hmm.
You put all of those things together, and that was the catalyst on defense. Todd Orlando making those adjustments to give SC a chance on offense. When the offense was dead to rights because they weren't moving the ball, it allowed them the opportunity to work through the kinks with Jackson Dart getting his first ever time because Keaton Slovis goes out with injury. And what happens? They figure it out.
Well, and that was the fun part of this game is that, yes, the offense needed some time to figure it out, but they eventually did figure it out. And then that third quarter is very much an interplay between the offense and defense, both feeling it at the same time. So the defense is feeling good and the offense is feeling good and the defense is getting a stop. And then the offense is rewarding them by getting a big touchdown soon after. And then the defense goes back onto the field and they're feeling good. And then they get another stop. And then the defense comes back out and scores again. And then, you know, that's what we haven't seen. We've seen USC have a quarter or a quarter and a half where they're just shut down defense, where they are not giving anybody any room to breathe. And the offense struggles and can't give them some of their own right back to put a touchdown on the board.
Yeah.
It was nice to see both of them working in concert together.
Yeah, and it all comes to the big flash point, which is a 4th and 9 with 1:32 on the clock. Alicia, what happens when there's a 4th and 9 with 1:32 on the clock?
Good things for USC?
Yes. Good things for USC. It's a 4th down situation, and SC throws the haymaker, the bomb, downfield after they had run out clock to take it down all the way to 32 seconds. Wait, hold on. It says 1:32. Why does it say 1:30?
Stat books are weird.
I don't trust the stat book here.
Yeah.
Because it also says 32 seconds. Whatever. The point is, it was 4th and 9. That is the key.
Yeah.
They had 3rd and 18 at the Wazoo 47. And that play is a little dump pass to Vimalapei, who picks up half of it, mm-hmm. 9 yards. Just like Reggie Bush picked up 11 of the mm-hmm. 3rd and 20. Back in 2005,
yep.
You didn't need the whole thing. You just put a little dump.
You knew what you were doing. Yeah.
He picks up half of it, so you know it's a 4th down play. SC down 14-0. You knew they needed something going into the half. You needed something. If you go down 14-0, I don't know that they win this game. At least not the way that they did. Not emphatically. They needed the spark plug, and the spark plug is the 4th and 9 touchdown bomb for 38 yards down the field to Gary Bryant Jr., right up the seam on a post. Beautiful.
I mean, it was just like you drew it up, right? This was
gorgeous.
I just had conversations about how USC never has wide open receivers, ever.
Yeah.
Or at least when they are open, they never hit them. Like, it just one of those things that USC does not do. And that play on 4th down was the textbook. You get your fastest guy open beyond the defense, and you hit him over the top. When the defense is trying to be aggressive because it's 4th down, and this USC has this happen to them regularly, where you take advantage of the aggressiveness of the opposing defense and you just burn them. And Gary Bryant Jr. can do that, and USC hasn't done it with him, and he proved he can do it. I mean, it's kind of a counterbalance to the play against Stanford where he drops the ball in the end zone. It was he had to do the adjustment underneath the ball to go get it. And it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. But that's what happens when you are open the way that he was. You can adjust to the ball. You can go get it. As opposed to you have a defender blanketing you and now you're both hand fighting for it.
Right.
Like that's USC doesn't have that happen often enough. And it was, again, one of those things where that's a momentum shifter that the 100%. Defense feeds, yeah. That the offense feeds, that everybody feeds.
Yeah, and we saw it in the moment and we talked about it in the moment, like, okay, that was the flip being switched.
Yes.
And I think it's easy to say that because of wishful thinking, other games you've ever seen in your life, all those things. SC still needed to not allow a miracle at the end of the half. They didn't. They still needed something to go right in the second half.
Which they have not been
and
reliable
Parker
about.
Parker Lewis gets the fumble recovery.
Yes.
The guy who was kicked out of the game last week
mm-hmm.
with a targeting foul on the opening kickoff. In the opening kickoff of this game, of this half,
second half, yeah,
of this half, recovers the ball on the field, right there, giving really? SC a chance in prime real estate
mm-hmm.
to suddenly, within moments of game time, be able to go down from 14-0 to 14-14.
Well, and that's, again, I mean, we talked about the defense and the offense playing off each other. That was special teams playing into that, too.
Right.
Special teams gets that turnover. But it doesn't mean anything unless the offense pays them back. And the offense paid them back. And that's the kind of, and it wasn't just like paying them back, like, oh, I guess we settled for field goal because we got the ball in field goal range. No, they went out and they scored. And, you know, USC doesn't score touchdowns in the third quarter very often. It's not their not their forte. But that was exactly the kind of drive that you needed. And it is, that's the one that's extended by, or was it the drive before the first half where it's extended by a questionable roughing the passer call?
Yeah.
But at some point, USC needs to start taking advantage of those weak calls that come the way of every Pac-12 team.
Yeah, if something's not going to go your way, I mean, make sure that it doesn't compound. And if something does go your way, make sure that you take advantage of it. And SC took advantage of those moments when they happen in the last, really, 45 minutes of this game. In the first 20 minutes, 15 minutes, it didn't go their way. Every little thing was going wrong. You saw the Chris Steele penalty. Jackson Dart looked like he had the ball covered, and then it was a perfect punch out to strip him on his like second drive. Like, things were not going SC's way, and then suddenly they were, and then literally everything came up SC. 28 points in the third quarter.
It was an
four
avalanche.
Four touchdowns.
Yeah,
I haven't run the numbers because I remember the last week I was looking into the third quarter stuff and I forgot how much SC actually did score in the third quarter last year. I think they had like 10 points against UCLA, and they had scored against Arizona. Somebody they had scored.
They had done a better job of occasionally getting a touchdown in the third quarter, where yes, in 2019 it was like you cannot score in the third quarter.
But it was still futile for the most part in the third quarter. It's not like they had fixed the problem. They had just been slightly better. This time, they were just tremendously better. 28 points. Including the strip sack by Drake Jackson. SC finally gets off the snide, records a sack. They have two in like successive moments, including the strip sack. Well, that was Drake Jackson finally breaking through to have some sort of play this year.
Can we talk about
that? He had the
that?
Interception in the first game, but outside of that, have you really
He's
noticed
been
him
a
on
little
the field?
Bit anonymous, yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if that's opposing offense is doing a good job of just quieting him down because he's clearly the threat.
Right.
But that sack was so much fun to watch because he's one-on-one on the outside. He beats his man. And then you just see him like in slow. It felt like slow motion. He was not moving in slow motion, but it felt like slow motion where he's bearing down on the quarterback blindside. So the quarterback has no idea that he's coming. And you're just sort of like holding your breath. Like, is he going to get there? Is the quarterback going to get the ball out? Is he going to get there? And then he does this like leaping, flying, arm smashing sack from behind that's just like if you were shooting a Disney movie where your team the protagonists need the big strip sack in the end zone to win the game or whatever, like that is the acrobatic leaping swatting safety that you would come up with.
Yes,
and you get the ball out, and then
the choreographer does that, and you're like, this doesn't
like that's not actually how people play
this
football
beautifully in the game.
Yeah. But Drake Jackson did it, and it's just one of those like just beautiful, just like that, like it's gonna be iconic in my mind, just leaping, smashing.
You know
like,
what it reminded me of?
Huh.
2017, SC and Cal at the goal line. I remember that Jenna Nwosu makes an incredible play where he leaps up and bats the ball down, and then jumps down in the middle of the air to get the ball up as an interception.
Yeah.
Obviously, a completely different play, but. That kind of acrobatics and athleticness also vaguely reminded me of like Free Willy breaching in the sense that like it just happened so slowly.
Yes, that's what it was like slow motion in the air. Yeah.
Yes, that it looked like it was all happening at the same time.
Yes.
And we thought it was a safety until the camera angle originally,
first,
you couldn't see the ball come out.
Yeah, at first I couldn't see the ball come out, but it clearly did. And it was clearly because of the way that Drake Jackson approached that sack.
Yeah, and Thule gets it.
It's not that he just tried to hit the dude. He wanted to hit the dude while also like bringing down his arm like a jackhammer to make sure that he disrupted any ball holdment that was going on. So, and really heads up play by Tuli Tupelotu to disengage from his block to get down there to pick up the ball before the offense could notice what was happening. Just a beautiful all around play. And it was one of those plays that USC need. USC needs that spark. Like, you don't need Drake Jackson to be in the backfield on every single play. You need him to be that guy that comes up when you need it.
Yeah.
And Talanoa Hufanga was often that for USC. Drake Jackson needs to be that guy, and he's done it now a couple times in this season. So that's all you can ask for. And that defensive score, my favorite thing about that defensive score is it is not the final touchdown of the third quarter. Because USC goes out and scores again on a long pass to Drake London. Like, mm-hmm. I love that they were still going out there wanting to put up more.
Yeah, and continue to put their foot on the their boots on the throats of the Cougars, and they kept doing that. Drake London scores the final touchdown. He finished the day, 13 catches, 170 yards.
He scores the second to last insane. Touchdown.
So, no, in the last quarterback of the third quarter.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
And SC goes up with a crazy score of 35-14 at the end of the third. They go into the fourth quarter, and they score 10 more points. They get a field goal. Your dad, who's over here watching the game, made a great point. It's so much nicer to watch this offense when the field goal is sprinkled in among the touchdowns rather than being in the replacement for the touchdowns.
When
the field was goal, able to finish off drives.
Yeah, when the field goal is the field goal to put you up 38-35 instead of the field goal that puts you up 17.
Right, and a Kyle Ford touchdown ends the thing.
Which is so great to see him score a touchdown. Dude looks massive. He looks like a tight end. Start using him like it.
Yeah, and then an interception right at the death to secure the unanswered points. So it's 45-14. SC wins. SC covers. SC was 1-0 under Dante Williams. We want to get to some main topic questions.
Yes, we're going to talk about the thing everyone wants us to talk about. Yes.
So let's do that after this break. All right, Alicia, we have to talk about it. This is the pressing question everybody wants to know. Everybody's tweeting us. Everyone's texting us. Everybody wants to know. How do you get Keenan Kristen involved in this offense?
Well, Keenan Kristen has to be eligible to play, first and foremost. If you're wondering why he's not present, he is not currently, as far as we know, he's suspended. Yeah.
Anyways, the point is, I want to talk about three things. One, Dante Williams. Before anything, talk about Dante Williams. What do you think about his performance as a first-time head coach in his first game? And do you think the turnaround in this game is a credit to Dante Williams, yes or why not?
Well, I think it's a credit to Dante Williams that the third quarter was so different. Something changed at halftime. And it's one outing, so I don't know if it's Dante Williams. Maybe it's Dante Williams asking more of his coordinators. Maybe it's Dante Williams. Maybe we'll find out that Dante Williams really fired up the team at the half. I would not be surprised if that was like whatever it is. I don't know, but I do know that we have never, ever, ever seen a Clay Helton team respond in a third quarter like this. So that is the big difference. These are the same players. These are the same coordinators. These are the same. You know, same all around. We have never seen a Clay Helton team respond in a third quarter like this. So I'm going to give the credit to Dante Williams because that's the difference that went on in this game.
Right.
Something happened that got them going.
We've seen SC have big first quarters. We've seen SC have big second quarters. We've seen SC have big fourth quarters. We haven't really seen a dominant third quarter like this. I'm going to say, and on the Dante Williams stuff, and really this is my take for everything, let's slow down and take a deep breath. Take a deep breath mm-hmm. and take everything in. SC, the way that they played this game, and this is not to discredit anything that happened in the game, but SC, this is what SC should do to Washington State. Washington State is not a good team. This is what you should do to them. Getting back to how they played in the second half of this game is what they should have done in the first half, and they got there. How did they get there? I think they made coaching adjustments in the second quarter. I don't necessarily think it was a half thing. I think what gave the mojo and the momentum and the oomph and all that was the fourth down touchdown at the end of the first half. But I think the adjustments were already made because you can see the change in direction. Offensively, they averaged 3 yards a play in the first quarter, and it was up to 7.4 in the second quarter. And the run of Washington State going on all their punts and all their three and outs and their futility had already started in the second quarter. So I don't think it was a halftime decision by Dante Williams. I think this was more of adjustments were made by both coordinators. We saw it from Graham Harrell. We saw it from Todd Orlando. We've talked about those. A lot of those means stopping the run defensively and taking away Max Borgi. And then offensively, sort of abandoning the run and opening things up a little bit and being able to trust Jackson Dart to be able to make plays. So I think there were adjustments made, but Dante Williams absolutely plays a role in steadying the ship and getting the mojo back and having, you know, a say in the second quarter and halftime. I think what I want to go back to is an article that came out of USCFootball.com. Our pal Keely Orr is involved with the inside look at what Dante Williams has changed. Did you read that thing?
It went
viral on Friday. It was pretty interesting about how the little changes that he's made, like players can't wear hoodies and stuff like that in practice.
Well, and everybody dresses.
Yeah, but they're like, it's like little anal things. Yeah. Like you can't wear a hoodie into a practice room and those kind of things. You can't do this. You can't do that. It's just establishing little rules. You can't step on the logo in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of these little things are meaningless, corny things. However, these are what you do because you need to establish that this is a change.
Yes.
This is different than what we were doing before. And so you change literally anything that you can. To make a food analogy like our friend Ryan Abraham, if you're having chicken noodle soup every day, then get lentil soup. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Just change something for the sake of it being different.
And focus on little things. I mean, I've been open about my struggle with mental health, depression, anxiety, all of those kinds of things. And I remember always my uncle once told me, like, just something very, very simple of make your bed every morning. It's a right. very, very
simple. Start with the win.
Yeah, it's a very simple task, but you start your day with you were productive. You started with a win.
Yeah,
and like it's those little things that sometimes, like, I mean, is that going to be the big thing that like saves you from dealing with mental health problems? No, but it's you add on little wins here and there, and yeah, sometimes something as simple as we're going to have new rules that are going to make you think differently about the way you approach your preparation. Like that's
because coaching styles are like diets. Everything works.
Yes.
It's just a matter of do you have the buy-in and does
it, is it going to work for you?
Is it going to work for you right now? Because usually you have to do one or the other. You alternate. Like we see this in like professional sports all the time. You have the hard-ass coach who loses the team and then the soft guy comes in. And then he loses the team. Then you got to go back to the hard guy, right?
Yeah.
Like you go back and forth between these things. All these things can coexist. They all can work. But you, when you're in a change like this, you change any little thing you can just because. And I think that you can make the little corny rules about not wearing a hoodie, which means it's nothing. And it's ironically is probably what makes people mad about Urban Meyer in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Are probably the little things that end up working for SC in this situation. So it's a little give and take that way. But yes, all these little things play a role. Dante Williams plays a role here. Now, let's talk about the quarterback situation. Jackson Dart sets the USC record for the most passing yards in a debut of anyone. And not only was this his debut, it wasn't even his first start. Keaton Slovis goes down on the third play of the game, and it's really similar to what Matt Fink did against Utah 2 years ago at the Coliseum. Slovis goes down on the first drive. He comes in, and he energizes the offense. Except Dart significantly better than Fink in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But it begs the question, what do you do with the quarterback situation? We don't know what Keaton Slovis' injury status is. We're recording this before we've looked through the press conference quotes, so we don't even know what was said in the press conference.
I have a tweet from Keely Orr from USCFootball.com.
Her name is Orr, by the way.
Orr. Did I say?
You said Orr.
Orr, whatever. Sorry, Keely. Interim head coach Dante Williams says that USC quarterback Keaton Slovis will be able to practice this week and, quote, will take it from there.
Yeah. So,
but we still haven't really heard what. Yeah. I mean, we've heard something about neck. It's something maybe upper body.
It looked like he took a shot to the head. So, yeah. Like, was it a concussion?
Maybe it
thing?
Was a concussion. I don't know. It was a neck strain.
It didn't look like a hard hit on him, but. It doesn't always have to be the crazy ones, right?
Yeah. A lot of times it's not.
Yeah, and so.
So what do you do?
What do you do at quarterback?
Well, okay. So the first question I have is: is Keaton Slovis able to practice this week? If the answer is no, then you do not throw him out there against Oregon State.
Right.
It's that simple.
Roll with Dart. Yeah.
Yes. Which I think is, if I were Dante Williams, I would be crossing my fingers. Not that I want Keaton to be hurt or anything like that. I absolutely don't want that. But like, if I were Dante Williams, I would want that decision taken out of my hands. And that would be the best case scenario. Take this decision out of my hands. If the decision is in Dante Williams's hands, I think this is an incredibly difficult decision to make. Jackson Dart is a true freshman. He was playing against a bad Washington State defense. And we need to stress that this Washington State defense is not good. So like, don't get it twisted.
Yeah, he also throws his first interception in triple coverage.
It was a very freshman interception. It was a bad throw.
He has the fumble, even though I don't hold
fumble,
that against him.
The fumble felt a lot like the Sam Darnold first game fumble, where he just maybe has to learn. Maybe you can't dive forward like that.
Sure, yeah.
Or maybe slide. You need to... I mean, and the thing that's so not heartbreaking, but like the frustrating thing about that fumble is he's got two hands around the ball. Like he's trying to do what you're taught as far as the ball security and stuff like that, but it's just a really perfect punch from the defender. So that one happens. The second interception is genuinely an arm punt, and they actually... I saw a quote on Twitter about how Dante Williams was joking about how Jackson set up Drake Jackson for the safety sack strip scoop and score thing with that arm punt, and Jackson Dart was joking about, yeah, it was totally on purpose. The arm punt I really don't care about. He was just chucking it up and he gave his receiver a chance and it just happened. In that context, it's fine. So while he made some freshman mistakes, he made many more impressive throws. While he had some erratic throws, he made even more impressive throws.
Live by the dart, die by the dart.
And I love his rushing ability. I love his running ability and the other element that it adds to this offense. Do I think that you can bench a healthy Keaton Slovis, who maybe just had a stinger and is able to come back in immediately and practice from day one? That is really rough on Slovis. But in the context of this season where the head coach has been fired, where you have an interim, where you're just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, I don't think it's out of bounds to go with Dart. Part of me would gauge the team.
The context matters here. I'm 100% with you.
Who does the team want to play for? That's my question.
I think in a normal situation, I think you stick with Slovis.
Yeah, honestly. Absolutely.
I think you stick with Slovis. I think Dart, you know, showed what he can do in this offense, but I also think that what the offense was able to do, they should be able to do with Keaton Slovis. I don't think that. Yes, his ability to run helps, but we've seen Keaton Slovis throw downfield in a very air-raidy offense before. We saw it in November of 2019 that we've talked about plenty of times. So if the idea is that only Jackson Dart can get you to that thing, I don't completely buy into that idea. I think Jackson Dart's ability to run helps. I don't think it is preventing SC from... Keaton Slovis's lack of ability is preventing SC from having... an offense that can score points. Is it preventing SC from having the best possible offense? I'll listen to that argument all day. And so in this scenario, I think it should, in theory, depend on Keaton Slovis's health, because you got to see what's going on. I will say that I don't think it's like a stinger, because if it was a quick stinger, I don't think Jackson Dart was good enough on his first two or three drives to warrant sticking in.
Slovis not coming back in as soon as he was able. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So clearly it was a little more serious than that, depending on whatever it is. Maybe it is just a concussion protocol thing. I don't know. We're going to find out later, maybe, if that. But you took my points right from me before I could make it. This is an interim head coach, and I think that SC right now is in the business of making changes to make changes to see what happens and to play around with the different pieces that you have. And I think that when you have that ability to make changes and to do anything and play with the paints that you have, you can paint with any color you pick. And that gives Dante Williams the ability to pull the plug on Slovis unfairly or quickly or any of those things. I think you can do it, especially when you look at the first 2 weeks, where it's not like the offense was lighting anyone's hair on fire. If anything, it's very much the opposite, and we've seen him regress. I don't think Keaton Slovis, despite the regression, has done anything to warrant being benched, because I think so many of the problems are bigger than Keaton Slovis.
Yes, they're systemic.
Absolutely systemic. So I don't think going to Dart's going to solve every issue, but when you're the interim head coach, and it's your job to just throw things at the wall and see what sticks and try changes for the sake of changes. Again, wearing hoodies in a meeting. If you're going to make that rule, then you have the ability to go with the hot hand here. Because SC has nothing to lose. They're playing with house money. If they lose games, well, you know, this is the problem that that Clay Helton put together. If they win games, well, it shows their ability. And maybe they end up showing things along the way that can be used going forward or whatever it is. And I think that the difficult part is the fan perspective. Because I think if you're the fan, you're looking at this for the future of the program years from now. I think you are watching games with dreaming about 2022. Because this season, even though it's not a lost season because people have bought back in, it's very much a lost season in the fact that everyone's looking to 2022 when there's a new head coach. And for the sake of the future, for the sake of 2022, it's better that you throw Dart in there and he starts.
Well, I mean, that's a question I'll ask to you because I know my answer. Which quarterback would you rather watch for the rest of USC season? I would rather watch Dart just because it's fun.
I'd rather watch Dart because I want to see the future of SC football. It's nothing against Keaton Slovis right now. Like I said, I don't think he's done enough to be benched when the problems are systemic.
Yeah.
But if SC is out here needing to solve things for the future and get ready for the next step, even though the new head coach isn't here yet, I mean, I guess I'm just going to ignore
the new head coach is not here yet. Yes.
You would hope not. But yes, I think we're on the same page. So either way, what I can tell you I do not want is to the controversy.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to
it. I know we get on here on the podcast and we bitch about all the narratives on USC Twitter, and we're probably really annoying in doing that. We sit here and complain about the people calling for Helton every single day, warranted or not. Like, it just would make things tired, right? And then he gets fired, and then it's like, after 2 days, I'm actually tired of hearing about who needs to be, who should be hired. So, like, unsubscribe me from this narrative.
Yeah.
And then here we are with a quarterback narrative. So, like, part of me is like, I don't want to just make a decision and be done with it. But either way, you're bound to hear something because people are going to point back. Remember, narratives don't have logic a lot of the times. And just because there are correlations doesn't mean it was the reason. So if SC turns this season around, you can absolutely bet the DVD at the end of the season that's put together is going to, like, point to Jackson Dart being the catalyst. Is Jackson Dart the catalyst for turning it around? Yeah. Maybe not. But it's absolutely going to be the thing that people would point to if he ends up being the quarterback and SC, you know, wins 10 games.
Well, and the problem now is that Keaton can come back in, and the moment he struggles, it's going to be like USC fans have a new thing to complain about. Like,
yeah, there's always going to be something to complain about.
Yeah, but now they've seen Jackson Dart, and now it's not just like the media saying he looks really good or guys who have watched YouTube compilations of his high school days saying he's going to be really good. Like, now people have actually seen in Cardinal and Gold what he can do, and that's that's going to create some issues. But the last thing that I want to say is, I know we talked about Keaton not being a captain doesn't really matter. I just want to put out there, it feels like it's going to matter now. Because if Keaton was a captain, I would feel much more confident that if Dante Williams asked, you know, who does the team want to fight for, I would feel a little bit more confident in figuring out that answer.
I know it's easy to say, who does the team want? But if you're the head coach...
But if you're the interim, if you're the substitute teacher and you come in and say, kids, what do you want to do?
Which I
movie?
Know,
like,
but...
Do you want to watch a movie? Like, if you're the substitute teacher, you just put the damn movie on.
No, I get that, but the thought of it makes me queasy.
I know,
that, like,
but...
You don't let the players make decisions. The players are partly... Like, they all advocated
the
for
players
Clint
are,
Elton, remember?
Yeah, no, I agree. The players don't.
I mean, Reggie Bush is out on Twitter advocating
for
Deion
Sanders.
For Deion
yeah,
Sanders.
No one wants don't, that juice. Like, no. No, but it is going to be a factor about who's going to lead the team. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. If Keaton's healthy. I mean, I guess the other question is, Keaton might not stay healthy. Jackson Dart might not stay healthy. He said after the game that his knee was fine, but also, like...
That was worrisome.
Yeah. I mean, we were a second away from Miller Moss having to take over in this game. So, you know, all we know right now is that the season is going to play out in a million different ways that we can't predict yet.
Yeah, 100%. So... Yeah. Last thing. Your thoughts on Jackson Dart's eye black.
Okay, hold on.
One eye black.
Can
we call him One Eye Jack?
One Eye Jack.
Oh my God.
One Eye Jack.
One Eye
it's,
Jack.
It's it. One Eye Jack. It's done. Okay. Jackson Dart's eye black. Number one. Is it a good look? I find it quite distracting. I don't know that he's pulling it off, except that he's got that swagger, so he's kind of pulling it off. My favorite thing about the Jackson Dart eye black, and I've said this now to everybody in my vicinity, so I'm sure you're probably annoyed with it, but like, Jackson Dart went into the locker room and put that one eye black on his face while he was the backup quarterback who probably wasn't going to see the field for many more weeks.
Yeah, and then he came out in the game and dropped dick.
Yes, that's literally what he did. So like, as I said to somebody on Twitter, do I think that a quarterback wearing one-eyed eye black is a good look? No, I don't think it's great. But if he keeps throwing touchdown passes, if he keeps winning, I do not give a crap. He could do we've had linebackers in the past who did the full...
The
Eddie Vanderdoes, like black, coming all like fading down the face. He could do...
I don't know your quarterback in blackface.
Well, no, I don't want my quarterback in blackface. You know, that's a problem. But like, do whatever you want with your eye black, bro. If you're winning games, if you're throwing touchdowns, I do not care.
Yeah. The thing that I enjoyed about this game is that Jackson Dart reminds me so much of Sunshine.
He is Sunshine. The hair.
I know what it is. It's the hair. It's the
coming
face.
Out the back of the...
It's the helmet. Like, yes. The helmet looks so similar to what T.C. Williams wore.
Mm-hmm.
And you put it together and like, that's Sunshine. And then you look at Washington State and Jaden Delora takes off his helmet. And it's like got streaks of like bleach and stuff in there. And like the way his eye paint is, which was like in crosses and stuff.
Yeah.
Very similar. I'm like... That's Rufio.
Yes, he looks like
Sunshine
Rufio.
Sunshine and Rufio. It's like movies from the 90s
yes.
have come back. And, yes.
I'm here for it. I'm here for both. I'm here for both. More personality, more excitement, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah. All right. Now's the time for you guys to call into the Rave Line. 213-373-1872 is the phone number. Give us your calls. Let us know what you were thinking about USC's 45-14 win over the Washington State Cougars, 45 unanswered points.
Can we just point out before we leave, literally as USC was winning this game, as the final whistle was ticking down, USC got a commitment from a dude called Ephesians Prysock, a cornerback, four-star guy.
I'm just going to ask the dumb question. Does Ephesians, is there a, like...
There's a book in the Bible called Ephesians.
For real?
USC is going to have a dude named Prophet Brown, and if this guy follows through, we'll have Ephesians Prysock.
Yeah,
it's
but,
like
but
it's
they
like
still haven't recruited Numbers Jones. Like,
Numbers Jones, no.
Exodus Williams? Yeah. Where the hell is Exodus Williams?
Yeah, get some Exodus up in here. Yeah. Yeah. Just saying.
All right. They'll have to settle for One-Eyed Jack.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
One-Eyed Jacks? You don't like that. Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
See ya. See ya.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.